seekers from coast to coast and around the globe. You are listening to the Mike Malloy Show, or as I've decided to call it, the MMS. No, that's probably not a good idea, is it? No. No cocaine and hookers here. Hey, welcome, truth seekers, to the show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for you this week. Broadcasting live from beautiful downtown Burbank. Television City. Tony, is this Television City? Do you know? Is this? Beautiful downtown Burbank in Television City. You remember that? You're too young. You don't even know what that refers to, do you? It's a little laugh-in humor. Do you know what laugh-in is? You do? Okay. Anyway, sitting in for Mike Malloy this week, all week long. Glad you could join us. He is off. He and Kathy and Molly are enjoying some much-needed summer vacation. Hope you're having fun this summer as well so far. I know I am not, but now that I'm here, maybe I will be. That's right, it's me, your friendly citizen, investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker from bradblog.com, where there is now a live chat room underway. You can stop on by there. I try my best to keep my eyes on the chat room. We'll see how I do. You can go to bradblog.com, go to the first item, and click through, and you'll find the chat room, and say hello to our lovely chat hostesses tonight. Jeannie Dean and Desi Doyen is in there. She's going to be joining me here in a minute. Of course, we're going to talk about, it's the lazy, hazy days of summer. Congress is on recess, so there's really not much going on, not much to talk about. Yet, we've got 3 hours, so we're going to come up with something. There is something to talk about. Bibi Netanyahu visited the White House today, Prime Minister of Israel, and I don't care. Couldn't care in the least. Couldn't be less interested. Maybe you are, but if you are, you can give us a call, although not until the third hour. We're going to leave the whole third hour open, if I can, for open lines. Our number this week only, don't bother the Malloys, call us here at the beautiful K-Talk AM 1150 studios in Burbank, 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. So, no, we're not going to talk about Israel today unless you want to later on. Then there's this. Obama administration is planning to sue Arizona to overturn the new Papers, Please immigration law. And I don't care about that either. What do you think? Why? Because I think the whole immigration mess is a phony issue. I couldn't care less about it. It's a phony issue. It's a right-wing issue. It's completely made up to get people angry so they show up at the polls. At least that's what I think. Again, you can tell me if you disagree. Unlike Mike, I do welcome, I was going to say wingnut callers, but that won't bring them in, will it? I welcome people who disagree with me, and you can get me on that also in the third hour. No, today we're going to cover what really matters. Real news, news you won't hear anywhere else. The L.A. County Superior Court has found Lindsay Lohan in contempt of court, and she'll be sentenced to 90 days. We are going to be covering the Lindsay Lohan story from every angle, live from the courthouse, analysis that you can't find anywhere else for the next 3 hours only, right here on the MMS. No, we're not going to cover that either. We are going to cover stuff that matters amongst things that matter. Oh, yeah, there is this oil gusher still going on in the Gulf, no matter how much the media may be bored with it. It's still important. So we are going to cover it. I am going to be joined by my lovely co-host, Desi Doyen, co-host of the Green News Report, heard on many fine progressive radio stations. If it's not heard on yours, I would complain. She'll be joining me in a moment to chat about the latest there. And then Ernest Canning will also be joining us, California attorney and guest contributor at the Brad Blog. He'll be joining us to talk about the moratorium that was overturned by this judge down there in Louisiana, Martin Feldman, and whether he ought to be impeached. Judge Feldman, not Ernie Canning. A little bit later, Vic Rawl, that's Judge Vic Rawl, will be joining us. He of the U.S. Senate race, Democratic U.S. Senate primary in South Carolina, who was defeated by unknown jobless candidate Alvin Green, the guy that nobody has ever heard of, who somehow managed to beat Judge Vic Rahl, a four-term state legislator, former circuit judge, out there for the Democratic nomination to the U.S. Senate in South Carolina on June 8th, for reasons that so far can only be attributed to the 100% unverifiable voting machines that they use in South Carolina and in dozens of states around the country. Speaking of media who doesn't care. So we're going to talk with Vic Rahl here live tonight from South Carolina. A whole lot more. What else do I have to take care of here? Let me take a quick break. Oh, did I give the number? I did give the number. 877-520-1150. You can also tweet me if you like at TheBradBlog. That's my Twitter name. And if I don't get more than 50 new followers by the end of tonight, I quit. That's what I say. I'm going to keep my eyes on there. You can comment us there as well. I'll keep my eyes on all of it. All right. See, Tony, I'm getting out quick. We're going to get out. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with all the new BP news. And there's a lot of it that folks just aren't talking about out there for some reason. Why? Because it's summer and because they got to go off and barbecue. And the fact that there's 100,000 barrels a day, as much as 100,000 barrels a day, leaking into the Gulf of Mexico, rolling up as tar balls now in the state of Texas, as well as Lake Pontchartrain in Louisiana. Now all Gulf states have been hit in some fashion by this oil disaster. Tony found a BP oil spill game. A real one. Really. We'll talk about all of that and much more straight ahead. Brad Friedman in for Malloy, feeling much better today. Thank you. You're listening to the Malloy Program. Much more straight ahead. Stay with us. Summertime. Yes, there is. We got your cure right here for the Summertime Blues. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy tonight and all week long, broadcasting live from beautiful downtown Burbank. Going to be joined shortly here by Ernest Canning to talk about Judge Feldman, the moratorium judge, the notorious moratorium. Notorious, got to come up with a rap name for him, and his conflicts of interest and whether he ought to be impeached. I am joined, however, momentarily by my lovely co-host of the Green News Report, Desi Doyen joins us. Hey, Des.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going okay. Well, you tell me. We're doing all right so far?
Well, yeah, you're doing great so far. Good. Well, first 17 minutes are awesome.
They were good, weren't they?
Yeah.
I thought so. Desi is, of course, my co-host and the managing editor of the Green News Report, heard, as I said, on many fine progressive radio stations. 6 minutes of independent green news politics analysis and snarky comment. And if you don't get it, then you don't get it. Call and bitch to your local programming manager. That's what I recommend.
Nicely.
What?
Bitch nicely, I guess, okay. Would be the word to say.
Yes. All right. You're right. Please ask them nicely.
Yes.
Yeah, you can say that. That's all
okay.
Right. That's all right. all right. So I wanted to actually get an update here since most of the media doesn't seem to care anymore about the BP oil spill. And, oh, it's only, what, 60,000 gallons? No, 60,000 barrels a day.
Right. 60,000 right? barrels a day, which means that
or maybe 100,000.
It could be as much as that. Yes.
Should we take BP's word for it? That it's.
I don't think anybody's taking BP's word for it, but it is kind of shocking that they still haven't figured out exactly how much is coming out of there.
And they can.
They apparently have the technology, but until we actually, you know, get a cap that allows them to collect all the oil that's mm-hmm. coming out, which we may never get, then they'll be able to say, oh, look, this is how much we have going into the tanker. Now we know exactly how much it is.
I thought that they had bragged in one of their annual reports about the fact that they were able to track this down to the liter, down to the spoonful of how much oil comes out of these wells. If that was the case years ago when they were bragging about it, were they lying then or are they lying now, Desi Doyen?
How about both?
BP lying?
Shocker.
We're going to get so sued. All right, here's some news today coming from Think Progress. Has a couple of BP-related items I wanted to run through here. BP used oil industry tax breaks to write off its rent for the failed deepwater rig. Reports continue to demonstrate how deeply unprepared BP was to deal with its disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, with tar balls reaching Texas and entering Louisiana's Lake Pontchartrain. But the New York Times now explains how the oil behemoth,
I think is
how it's
pronounced.
Behemoth took advantage of U.S. tax policies to significantly benefit from the failed Deepwater Horizon rig. Transocean, the company that owns the rig, used well-known tax havens in the Cayman Islands and Switzerland to reduce its U.S. corporate tax rate by almost 15%. Well, I'm glad, because, you know, the oil game, it's tough to make a profit in the oil game.
It's,
isn't it?
Yes, it's, yeah. It's a terribly, terribly difficult,
yeah,
difficult,
it's very,
expensive.
The margins, the profit margin. And due to a break in the U.S. tax code, BP was then allowed to write off 70% of the rent that it paid to Transocean on its own tax bill. According to a letter sent in June to the Senate Finance Committee, the benefit amounted to a deduction of more than $225,000 a day since the lease began. As the Wonk Room's Pat Garofalo writes, quote, essentially, the U.S. taxpayer paid BP to lease a rig that was incorporated in a foreign country for the purposes of avoiding the U.S. corporate tax. This is the tax code we have. And this, by the way, is on top of all the other subsidies that the fossil fuel industry gets, that the oil industry gets. Remember, this is an industry, BP, made $20 billion in profit over each of the last 3 years. ExxonMobil made what was their what are they? They're the
I
big
think
ones.
It was $45 billion per quarter.
$45 billion per quarter.
Yeah.
Other than that, let's give them some more corporate welfare. Brilliant. In the meantime, what did Obama announce over the weekend? $2 billion to the
$2 billion, a whole $2 billion with a B for solar thermal plants to be built in the deserts of Arizona.
Now, we're delighted about solar thermal plants, new renewable energy.
Yeah,
and
it's kind
and
of a
things.
No-brainer, you know, yeah. Free money falling from the sky, essentially.
Yeah.
Let's go catch it.
Wait, you're talking about the tax breaks or the...
No, I'm talking about the solar energy falling from the
sky.
That is free.
That's
the energy that, you know, that it's kind of free and you can run stuff off of it.
So we're glad that Obama is trying something to get this to get this going, at least until we get clean energy legislation ever, if that ever happens. But so this is a good thing. But it's $2 billion. It's nothing. BP makes this in an afternoon.
Well, we already know that in an analysis that came out, I think it was in the fall, a report showed that of the billions in tax subsidies and incentives that go to the renewable energy industry, they measured between 2002 and 2008 that the renewable energy industry got $29 billion. However, during that same period of time, the fossil fuel industry got $72 billion.
Of course it did. And they're doing a great job with it, by the way. This benefit to BP, the fact that the U.S. taxpayer is essentially paying BP to lease this rig, this is a symptom of a larger issue, writes Pat Garofalo at Wonk Room. Garofalo explains that, quote, the U.S. tax code is actually riddled with breaks for the oil industry despite the industry's record profits in recent years. Seema Gandhi, a senior policy analyst for the Center for American Progress, has counted 9 different subsidies that the U.S. government gives to the oil industries, including refunds for drilling costs and refunds to cover the cost of searching for oil. Last month, only 35 senators voted for eliminating $35 billion of the industry's subsidies. Fully cutting the corporate welfare would save, this particular corporate welfare would save $45 billion per year. And according to the Office of Economic Policy at the Department of Treasury, affect domestic production by less than 0.5%. The flow of revenues to oil companies is like the gusher at the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. Heavy and constant, said Senator Robert Menendez, Democrat of New Jersey. This is in response to BP's Deepwater write-off. Quote, there is no reason for these corporations to shortchange the American taxpayer. There is no reason, is there? But they do it. And they get away with it. And then you got these teabaggers out there complaining that, oh, we don't have enough money. Oh, there's a deficit. But let's keep giving these free money to these oil companies, to these coal companies who don't need it, who kill people in the bargain. And oh, yeah, let's keep that trillion-dollar war going. Where could we possibly cut the budget, Tez?
Got no answer for
you
there.
You got no one? You stop the wars, you stop the free money to the corporate welfare queens like BP, ExxonMobil, and what's his name, Massey.
Right, how's that going so far?
Yeah, which one? The cut? How's it?
Any of them.
Any of, yeah, not going, is it? They're not doing it. They're acting like we got no money, we can't pause. Let's cut social services. That's what we have to do. God forbid we should cut the Pentagon budget. All right, do I have any time for any more of these? No, no time? All right, well, maybe in the third hour. You want to come back in third hour?
Sure.
All right. Who's going to answer the phones then? That's what I thought. Well, let's see. Well, just real quickly, BP has skimmed or burned about 60% of the amount that it promised regulators it could remove in a single day. So they lied. The Defense Department has kept up its immense purchases of aviation fuel and other petroleum products from BP nonetheless. And the federal agency charged with protecting endangered species signed off on the Minerals Management Service's conclusion that deep water drilling for oil in the Gulf of Mexico posed no significant risk to wildlife. Heck of a job, MMS. This is the Mike Malloy Show, the MMS. I'm in for Mike. Back right after this. After the hour here on the Mike Malloy program, you can keep it cranking there, Tone. In case anybody's wondering, by the way, Tony Sorrentino, he's the guy. We get a lot of comments, Tony, that people want to know who does the music when we're sitting in. That would be Tony. Every now and again, he'll take an idea of mine. Mostly he just vetoes them and plays what he wants anyway. And it rocks. Thank you, brother. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike. You can call us here at the program at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. We're talking about oil and all the crimes involved. And to that end, I am joined by Ernest Canning. He's a active member of the California State Bar since 1977. He's received both an undergraduate and graduate degrees in political science, as well as a Juris Doctor. He's a Vietnam vet. 4th Infantry, Central Highlands, 1968. And, most prestigiously, of course, he is now an important guest contributing blogger at bradblog.com. Hey, Ernie.
Hey, how you doing, Brad?
Welcome to the Mike Malloy program, my friend.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I know we need to give you a title. Perhaps you should be senior Brad Blog's senior legal analyst. How does that work?
Anything with Brad Blog on it sounds good to me.
You're very kind. I'll take it. All right, you've covered you cover a lot of important stories, and I want to recommend folks read your stuff whenever they see your name pop up at Brad Blog. But of late, you've been taking a look at the case for impeachment against Judge Martin Feldman. This is the guy. This is the judge, the federal judge down there in Louisiana, who overturned the moratorium that they put in place after the oil disaster down there. And let's be clear, Ernie, this is 33 exploratory wells that they're talking about shutting down momentarily for 6 months and out of how many in the Gulf? It's more than 3,000.
Actually, I think the number is higher. I was looking at the the government's brief today that they filed in the Court of Appeal to get an emergency stay. And let's see, I think they said it was 33 out of 3,600 structures in the Gulf dedicated to offshore oil exploration.
So 3,600, and they put a temporary moratorium on 33 of them. Bobby Jindal, the Republicans down there, are freaking out. Oh, we can't shut them down. It's going to be, I heard Newt Gingrich say, it's going to cost 80,000 jobs, Ernie, for these three. That's a lot of people working on each of those.
Well, Jindal actually intervened in the case, asking to file a brief on behalf of the plaintiffs in the case to prevent the moratorium from going through.
Well, that's right. And so we've got this suit, and about 2 weeks ago, I think it was now, Judge Martin Feldman, not Marty Feldman, not the famous...
Not the comedian.
Right. This judge, not funny at all. Not like Marty Feldman. Anyway, so he overturns this moratorium. Before we talk about his conflict of interest and whether he ought to be impeached, on what basis, Ernie Canning, did he overturn this moratorium in the first place?
Well, he used the language that is required by the Administrative Procedures Act that he can only overturn the decision if the department had abused its discretion. Whether the facts were there to justify that is a major bone of contention that is involved. In fact, I have a new piece I'm drafting based on what was really a powerful brief by the government, basically saying that it was Judge Feldman who abused his discretion.
So he's making the claim that the government abused their discretion to shut down these?
Specifically the department, and some of the things that he has done, like he stepped in and said that a 7.5% failure rate of, let me see if I can see what the precise item is that they were talking about in the brief, because that wasn't part of what I covered in the previous one, but a 7.5% failure rate in the blowout preventers did not justify the moratorium. And what the government is saying is that he basically has substituted his own personal judgment for the judgment that Congress basically gave to the Department of Interior and the various agencies that they have to make these types of safety decisions.
So let me understand the way the chain of custody here, if you will. Congress makes the law giving the Interior Department the right to make certain decisions in regulating the way the drilling is done in the Gulf.
And it's called the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act, and which describes the OCS or Outer Shelf as a vital national resource. And basically you have that, and you have regulations that are adopted by the agencies that are designed to protect safety. And in fact, in the brief that was filed by the government, it said that Congress expected drilling operations would employ technology precautions and techniques sufficient to prevent or minimize the likelihood of blowouts, loss of well control, fire, spillage, and other occurrences that may cause damage to the environment or to property.
And so this is given to the Interior Department. They have the power to make these decisions, to make sure that these regulations are being met. Correct?
Right. And in fact, what a court is only allowed to do is overturn this if the agency charged with it had acted in an arbitrary, capricious abuse of discretion or otherwise not in accordance with law. And the reviewing court only examines what the agency decision is based on, whether or not there's a rational relationship between the decision by the agency and the danger to be dealt with. And so, the government's basically put together a pretty substantial argument and lays out a lot of things that in the government's brief, they lay out a lot of things that Judge Feldman ignored. He relied on this safety study, but ignored a declaration and other items that were placed before
well,
him
and
that
would
provide the scientific support for what they did.
Okay, well, this I don't want to get ahead of us here because I want to. This is their brief for their upcoming hearing now, where they're appealing this this verdict on Thursday.
That hearing is on Thursday in front of a three-judge panel.
Let me get to that then in a moment, because I want to focus on Feldman here. We've got a case where the plaintiffs, of course, have a right to redress the government and any regulation that they think is out of line or, as Feldman ruled, abusing their discretion. So they bring this case. Feldman looks at it, and he says that they abused their discretion. Now, on what basis did Feldman make this judgment?
Well, that would take me to read through one line after another decision, because I think that the basis for Feldman's decision, although he's claiming that the Department of Interior acted arbitrarily, Feldman's decision is pretty arbitrary. And what's really troubling is the timing on all this, because the case is filed June 7th, he makes his first order in the case, so you know that the case was assigned to him by then. The motion for a preliminary injunction, which they have to show extraordinary circumstances to get relief, that's filed on the 9th, and on the 11th, Judge Feldman shortens the time for a hearing on that motion. It was supposed to be on June 28th. He shortens the time to June 21, which gives the government very little time to not only get in their responsive papers, but since we're talking about a preliminary injunction, it's to get their evidence before the court. So that in itself is disturbing, is that he had, on such a case of this magnitude, had given the government such a short time to respond. And the hearing takes place on the 21st on the motion, and the very next morning, which is the morning he's drafting his decision on the case, he unloads his Exxon stock, where Exxon happened to own one of the rigs that was at issue here.
Right. And he says, so that's the hearing itself on the case, on the merits of the case, was June 21st. His verdict is read on June 22nd, correct?
Not a verdict, a ruling.
I'm sorry, you're right, the ruling.
Yeah.
And yet he puts out then these new financial disclosures where he says the Exxon stock that he owned was sold at the opening of the stock market on June 22, 2010, prior to the opening of a court hearing on the oil spill moratorium case. This was his disclosure. And we're all supposed to think, well, before he made the decision, before he had the hearing on this case, he unloaded these ExxonMobil stocks, so everything was fine.
Well, from my perspective, Brad, and, I haven't really heard that from some of the other people like John Dean, who appeared on Rachel Maddow, saying, you know, they were basically, in fact, it looked like John Dean was misled by that. But what bothers me most about this case is not just the conflict of interest. It's that statement is so deceptive, because all the pertinent hearings had already occurred before he unloads the stock. The only thing left for him to do on the 22nd is to draft his decision, and if there's a hearing, to have the parties come in so he can read his decision. So he already knew that he was arriving at a decision. In fact, what troubles me is that the entire sequence of events of how quick everything happened and his refusing to allow the hearing to proceed in a normal course suggests that he had a decision in mind from day one and got to that decision, and then as he's doing it, he goes, oh my God, I guess I better unload this.
But
to put in his declaration that it's before a hearing is deceptive, because all the pertinent hearings had already been completed, and for a federal judge to actually be misleading basically his own court administrator by amending his financial declaration is very troubling.
We're going to we're speaking with attorney Ernest Canning, contributor to Brad Blog, and well, I want to ask you. We're going to take a quick break here, Ernie, but when we come back, I want to ask. Look, he unloaded the stock. Does it matter when? Obviously, he wouldn't have made money on it because he sold it. So there's nothing to worry about here, right? Don't answer yet. We'll get your answer after the break, and we'll find out whether this is an impeachable offense and if anybody's doing anything about it. You're listening to Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, speaking with Ernie Canning. Taking a quick break here. Live, we'll be with you all night. Vic Rawl, by the way, coming up after the top of the hour. Stick with us.
Don't be afraid to care.
The court's in session. Now, here come the judge. Here come the judge.
Here come the judge.
Yeah, it's our second laughing reference in a single Mike Malloy show. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, speaking with attorney Ernest Canning about this Judge Martin Feldman, who overturned the deepwater drilling moratorium and had some pretty serious conflicts of interests, it seems to me. And there's going to be a hearing coming up Thursday, I believe, where the government is appealing this crazy decision. We're talking again about 33 exploratory platforms out of some 3,600 that are still operational out there in the Gulf, and I had referenced Newt Gingrich, who had claimed that 80,000 jobs were going to be lost by these 33 rigs being shut down for 6 months. He was on the Bill O'Reilly show actually saying that. I don't have the audio, but and don't trust me. Go look it up. You'll see. Mary comments in the bradblog.com chat room that API is claiming 1,400 jobs per rig, and then it's about and it's about 100 to 400 people actually on the rig, says Mary. The rest of the exaggerated figures are onshore jobs, and that's 46,200 total if you multiply 1,400 by 33, if you buy into the notion that it's 700 jobs onshore for each rig, which she says she don't buy. That still doesn't get us to the 80,000 that Newt Gingrich is lying about on Fox News. Also, speaking of liars and clueless yutzes, John Boehner, the senior, the majority leader in the U.S. House, said, well, yeah, we should have a pause in drilling, but not, we shouldn't shut down, we should only shut down the deep water sites for a while. That's what the moratorium is. This guy, this jackass doesn't even, he would be the Speaker of the House if the Republicans take over the House this November, and he doesn't even understand this moratorium that he's out speaking against. Okay, Ernie, before we took this break, Judge Feldman, before he overturned this decision, he had, he sold his stock. Before he overturned the moratorium, he sold the stock on the morning that he announced his ruling in this case. So he sold the ExxonMobil stock. Conflict of interest done, right?
No.
No?
No.
Why not?
First off, that's only one of the conflicts that he had. At the time, at least based on a decision that he issued in a separate case, it was a May 14 order, he had direct ownership in Ocean Energy, which is owned by Transocean, Inc., which, as you know, is the owner of the Deepwater Horizon.
Deepwater Horizon, yeah.
Blew up. So you've got a problem there. He had extensive holdings in BlackRock, and BlackRock, as you know, is the biggest shareholder of BP.
Oh,
by
BP.
Far the most prominent investor in BP is BlackRock. Now, there are some provisions in the law that might be able, if that's a mutual fund, to point to that one and maybe escape, but he can't escape the others. And the relevant statute says that a judge shall disqualify himself in any proceeding in which his impartiality might reasonably be questioned. And among that, he also has to disqualify himself if he knows that he or his spouse or a minor child in his household has a financial interest in the subject matter of the controversy.
But getting rid of the stock then, Ernie, on the day of, doesn't that remove the financial interest? If setting aside
too little too late, in my opinion, because what we're talking about is the code imposes a duty on the judge from the moment he gets the case. In fact, it says a judge shall inform himself about his personal and financial fiduciary interests. So he had an obligation the moment he got this case to look to see if he had any conflicts. And if he learns that his decision is hopelessly conflicted because he was owning the stock, he didn't have to make a decision right away. What he could have done is recuse himself and have the case reassigned to another judge.
It doesn't mean
that the motion is going to be denied or granted. It means that a judge who doesn't have the conflict should make the decision.
And if he didn't think there was a conflict, if he didn't think there was a conflict, why did he bother to sell it in the first place, whether it was on the day of the ruling or not? Okay, we got less than a minute here, Ernie. In your opinion, is this an impeachable offense? And have you heard anybody else calling for impeachment in this case?
Well, I think it is an impeachable offense. It's the only way that you can remove a federal judge. Otherwise, this man's on there for the rest of his life, and he's been there since 1983. I've seen one other blog item calling for his impeachment. I've seen nothing in the mainstream media about it, and so far no member of Congress has stepped forward to do the right thing. It's rather rare that a federal judge gets impeached, but the impeachment process is to preserve the integrity of the judicial system, and I think that, quite frankly, he has compromised the integrity of the judicial branch of government by what he did.
We'll follow this case. We'll check in after Thursday's hearing. Ernest Canning from BradBlog.com, our senior legal analyst. Thank you, Ernie.
My pleasure, Brad.
All right, brother. We will have a judge who is not to be impeached, Judge Vic Rolfe from South Carolina, who supposedly lost to Alvin Green in the U.S. primary down there, Senate primary. He will join us in the next hour. Problems with the voting machines? Yeah, I think so. Brad, in for Malloy. Minutes after the hour, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy, broadcasting live from Los Angeles tonight and all week long. Hope you will join us. Mike will return next week. I want to mention our chat room is open at BradBlog.com. Excuse me. You can join us there. You can also call us at 877-520-1150. I'm going to leave the entire third hour of the show open for your calls. But if you have any questions for Judge Vic Rolfe, he will be joining us momentarily from South Carolina. He is the candidate who is said to have lost to Alvin Green, the candidate nobody ever heard of out there for the U.S. Senate race in South Carolina a few weeks ago. When I say said to have lost, I mean said by the ESNS voting machine company. because the election was run on 100% unverifiable voting systems. There is no evidence that even a single vote cast on election day on those ESNS touchscreen machines, no evidence that even a single vote was recorded accurately as per the voter's intent. Now, these machines, these ESNS machines, are notoriously terrible. They fail time and time again in state after state, and yet we continue to use them. Why? I don't know. I'll ask Judge Rawl in a little bit, but he's going to be joining us shortly. But let me just give you a quick idea of some of the failures of these of this ESNS Ivotronic machine. It's probably, by the way, used in your state. And you can go to verifiedvoting.org. They've got something called the Verifier. It's actually verifiedvoting.org/verifier. And find out if ESNS machines are used in your state. They probably are, because they are the world's largest voting machine company. And their machines are crap. Let's see. Here's just some examples. Faulkner County, Arkansas. Though the ESNS Ivotronics were said to have worked to perfection during testing and early voting in 2008, a number of election outcomes in local primaries had to be reversed after it was discovered that the internal numbers didn't match with the system's paper trails, quote unquote. The county election commissioner said the failure should not have been possible. In 2006, you may remember, the special election for the U.S. House between Vern Buchanan and Christine Jennings. That was where they used the ESNS Ivotronic touchscreens, the same ones they're using up there in South Carolina, where 18,000 votes disappeared in that election on the ESNS Ivotronics in Sarasota. This was to replace Catherine... I've forgotten her name. The Secretary of State of Florida from 2000. This was to replace her, whatever her name is. Apparently, I wanted to forget it. Anyway, 18,000 votes disappeared in a race that was ultimately decided by just 369 votes. Okay? Nobody to this day can explain where they went. There is speculation, but you can't explain it. We don't know it for sure, in large part because these voting machines are not allowed, you know, nobody can examine these machines. They did get some computer scientists who were able to look at the machines in 2006, given the importance of this race. But they didn't come out with any answer. They had some ideas, some guesses, some whatever, and yet they still use the machines. Now, to Florida's credit and to Charlie Crist's credit, the governor, he was the incoming governor at the time. He was a Republican at the time. He took the opportunity to get rid of the damn machines, for the most part, in Florida, and go to paper ballots. Yes, the paper ballots are counted by machines as well, but hey, we're getting there, one step at a time. Okay, that was Sarasota County. Monroe County, Arkansas. Just a few weeks ago, on May 18th, covered at Bradblog and nowhere else, thousands of votes were reported on election night and then promptly disappeared after the U.S. Senate primary in Monroe County, Arkansas. I spoke with state officials, both state and local officials. They haven't been able to explain why thousands of votes simply disappeared. They were there on election night on the Secretary of State's website. They were gone a few days later. They are still gone. There is still no explanation. Again, ESNS Ivotronic touchscreen voting used in large part across Monroe County. Clay County, Kentucky. Six high-ranking election officials, including the county clerk, a circuit court judge, and the school superintendent, were found guilty this year a federal election fraud after it was found that they had been buying and selling votes for decades, but most recently, in 06, had drafted conspirators to change their registration from R to D in order to work at the polls and change the votes of voters on ESNS Ivotronic touchscreens after the voter had left the voting booth. It's not really a booth, but you get the idea. They would actually go in and change the votes on the touchscreen systems, the ESNS Ivotronic touchscreen systems, the same ones that were used in South Carolina to elect Alvin Green a candidate that nobody ever heard of, who did no campaigning, who had no campaign website, who has no job, who has no computer, who has no cell phone, who didn't spend a day out on the stump. Somehow he defeated Judge Vic Roll 59 to 41%. Yeah, that's likely. Again, ESNS in Pottawatomie County, Iowa. The results of a number of races in the 2006 GOP Republican primary were overturned after a hand count of the paper ballots they had, luckily, was ordered by the county clerk when he noticed that a young college student that no one had ever heard of had defeated a longtime incumbent in one of the races. Sounds kind of like South Carolina, doesn't it? The hand count revealed that a number of those who thought they'd lost had actually won, and those who thought they'd won had actually lost. L.A. County, California, in the statewide 2008 primary in June of 2008 on the ESNS IncaVote Plus systems, the electronic ballot marking device misprinted four of my own votes. Four out of 12 of my own votes were misprinted on the L.A. County ESNS electronic voting system. This was this particular one was made largely for blind and disabled voters, largely blind voters, because it's an audio ballot system, and it misprinted 4 out of 12 of my votes. I know this because I'm not blind, because when it printed out, I was able to read it, and I was able to check that, in fact, it misprinted 4 out of 12 of my votes. The L.A. County Registrar confirmed, in fact, what had happened, claims that it had been, that the poll worker had miskeyed in the number of my for my precinct. But 2 years later, in June of this year, I went back to the same polling place, and two different machines did the same thing when I tried to vote on them. Eventually, I had to vote with the paper ballot manually. The registrar says, oh, it's the same problem. It happened again. But it happened only to you, Brad. So, no worries. Just because here we are in Los Angeles, largest voting jurisdiction in the nation, it only happened to you, Brad. Okay. That registrar, Dean Logan, will hopefully be joining us tomorrow night to discuss what happened and what will happen in the future. Now, I could go on and on. Reports of touchscreen vote flipping in Palo Pinto County, Texas, Berkeley County, West Virginia, both of those in 08, Jackson and Putnam counties, West Virginia in 08. You can actually see this happen. We've got video at Brad Blog showing the county clerk demonstrating how he had fixed the machine that had been flipping votes, and then it flips right on the camera, on the videotape, as he's demonstrating how it works great. And yet we still use these voting machines. Davidson County, Tennessee, that's Nashville, in 2008. Election integrity filmmaker Patricia Earnhardt, filmmaker of Uncounted, The New Math of American Elections, which, disclosure, I happen to be in. Her vote, she couldn't get it to register for, I believe it was, Barack Obama. And when the poll worker finally came over to try to help her, he was trying to get it to be selected for Obama, and it chose Cynthia McKinney instead. Again, right in front of her eyes. And yet, we continue to use this crap. And it is this crap that has apparently elected Alvin Green to be the Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate to run against Jim DeMint this fall in South Carolina. The man who Alvin Green is said to have beaten is Vic Roll, Judge Vic Roll. He will join us momentarily. And, oh, yeah, by the way, thanks, Des. Catherine Harris was the Secretary of State in Florida in 2000, the one whose seat was then being filled in the U.S. House in that special race where 18,000 votes disappeared. No one still knows where they are. And I'm the conspiracy theorist? What the hell? Tony, I didn't even get to half the things on this list. Don't you think we should be able to verify our votes? Don't you think the citizens ought to be able to know that their votes have been counted and recorded accurately? Is that too much to ask? Does that make me a conspiracy theorist? I will be joined momentarily by conspiracy theorist Judge Vic Roll, live from South Carolina, to discuss his election and what the hell he's going to do from here now that the Democratic Party has said, yeah, we agree. Alvin Green won. Really? Brad, in for Malloy. Stay with us.
What is love? And the evidence is clear. I'm not alone. There are thousands of us here. This is my democracy. You won't go telling me my vote don't matter anymore.
No, you won't. You can try. It is worth fighting for, and we are joined now by a man who took the unusual step of actually fighting for all of our votes. Judge Vic Rahl was elected to the South Carolina House of Representatives four times, serving from 77 to 78 for a total of 8 years. He then served on South Carolina's Workers' Compensation Commission from 86 to 90, served as a circuit court judge from 91 to 2003, came out of retirement in 2008 to be elected to the Charleston City County Council in South Carolina. He was recently a candidate for the Democratic Party's nomination to the U.S. Senate before being almost inexplicably, and almost is a kind word here, almost inexplicably bested, according to the 100% unverifiable ESNS electronic voting system used in the state, by Alvin Green, an unemployed military vet with no campaign website, no campaign appearances, no computer, not even a cell phone. Green's victory was upheld the week before last, despite a five-hour protest hearing that Rahl held before the state's Democratic Party executive board, when he argued in no uncertain terms that the reported loss could only be explained by a failure in the state's ESNS voting system. Judge Rahl, welcome, sir, to the Mike Malloy program.
Thank you very much, Brad.
I'm delighted to have you, and I'm delighted that you stood up and fought. We've seen so many elections where we have issues, you know, very much like yours, maybe not quite as blatantly obvious and questionable, but where Democratic candidates and sometimes Republican candidates, but where they are afraid of being seen as a conspiracy theorist, a crazy guy, a tinfoil hat wearer, and so they don't even fight the fight. They don't even bring up the point that these machines are unverifiable and often failed. Why did you decide to suffer all of those slings and arrows, Judge?
Well, I'll start out by saying that my age, which is 64, I'm bulletproof. I've got rhinoceros skin, and it's too late to send me to Vietnam.
And,
when we saw the returns coming in and compared them to the other two candidates on the statewide Democratic primary ticket, we realized that something was going extremely wrong. No idea who Alvin Green was, never heard from him, never saw him, never saw anything about him. And when it happened, the next thing we knew the next morning, which was Wednesday morning, was that he apparently was also facing a charge which I think is probably closest akin to internet porn.
Right.
We basically went into what happened mode, and as a result of that, through your blog and other experts, the League of Women Voters in Charleston County in the state of South Carolina had put on a symposium on this machine in 2008, which I attended.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't remember it that well until after it bit me, but I certainly remembered it thereafter. And we put together a presentation, and the difficulties are blatantly obvious. We had Republican runoffs. We had a couple of Democratic runoffs. The machines had to be wiped and ready to go again in 2 weeks for the runoffs. We basically had 10 days in which to put together a credible protest to the election. And I think we did a pretty good job of doing that credible protest. The problem, of course, is that South Carolina election law says that if you're going to protest successfully, you've got to be able to show that the number of votes that you separated you and your opponent could be overcome by individuals whose votes had been tampered with. The unique thing about that is that with an election with a 30,000 vote difference, the only way to do that was to try to utilize the expertise available, both academic, statistically, politically science, probably historically on political science basis, and, of course, computer science, to show that these machines historically are bad. Number two.
Hold on. Actually, hold the thought, because I got to get to a quick break. We'll have a big block after this break. Speaking with Judge Vic Rawl out of South Carolina about what went wrong in the U.S. Senate race that elected a man who nobody has ever heard of. We'll get details on his protest, what's wrong with those machines, much more with Vic Rawl right after this. Unbelievable that we have to fight for democracy in our democracy. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Brad of bradblog.com speaking with Judge Vic Rawl from South Carolina, who we are informed by the unverifiable, 100% unverifiable ESNS voting system that they use across the entire state, lost somehow to Alvin Green in the recent U.S. Senate primary, Democratic U.S. Senate primary. Alvin Green, the man that no one has ever heard of, versus Vic Rawl. Okay, Judge, so you hold a protest hearing, you file a protest, you had a five-hour hearing. I was able to watch the whole thing, by the way. Great job. Was able to watch the whole thing streaming on the web. Briefly give us the summary of the case that you made, and then we'll see where we go from there.
Well, the summary was pretty clear. We put up a statistician to show that statistically the outcome was impossible, or at least a one percenter. We put up a political scientist to testify historically that this could not happen. And we put up a computer science people, or actually a computer science person who was speaking on behalf of more than one person, indicating that, of course, the machine could be hacked, or it could have its memory faulty in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Anything from flipping the entire vote to one for four or any combination thereof.
Mm-hmm.
The problem, of course, is that from a legal standpoint, when you go before the executive committee, it's just like going before the South Carolina Election Commission. You have to prove the numbers of people that are different. And from a legal situation in South Carolina, that normally requires a number of people to stand up and testify that their votes were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
In our case, 30,000, that was impossible. Now, in some respects, it's the law not catching up with reality.
Well, Judge, if I can break in here, it's impossible because there's no way for, even if you had the time to bring in 30,000 people, there's no way that any one of those 30,000 could know if their vote was counted correctly or at all, correct?
That is exactly correct, Brad. And let me follow up on the legal thing and conclude, and then obviously we can chat about it. The legal requirement, as I told you, is showing the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The problem, of course, is that when you look at the law, it's taken forever for DNA evidence to come into effect, and DNA evidence is never 100,000% accurate.
Right.
It's always 1 in 10 billion or 10 million or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I will also suggest to you and your audience that there are people on death row in this country that have been convicted of a crime in which no body was ever found, nor was the murder weapon found. Now, in those sorts of circumstances, you have to be able to put up evidence that gives rise to the conclusion that you're bringing forward.
Right.
And we did that. We did that. And the bottom line is the executive committee looked at it from a standpoint of succinct and specific smoking gun evidence,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, in a 10-day period of time, without access to the machines, and, of course, a lot of this is proprietary from the standpoint of the computer software from ES&S. So even if we could have gotten into it, there's extreme difficulty if we'd have been able to get it and determine what exactly and specifically happened.
Well, now this is one of the issues here is one of those people who voted on the voting machines. And by the way, we have yet to note here that there was an 11-point disparity between the paper ballots, the absentee paper ballots that were cast versus the election day votes that were cast on these voting machines. Now, on these voting machines, they're touchscreen machines. There's no evidence of how people actually voted, no way to verify that, but at least you can get to the memory cards, the internals of the machines, if you are allowed, if you can afford the computer scientists to do it, if you're allowed by the state, and then finally, if you're allowed by the private voting machine companies. The idea that this is proprietary information, Judge, Your Honor, that you're not allowed to get to examine to determine whether you won or lost an election, a public election, seems to me to be insane.
Well, I totally agree with you, and I'll go one step further. In South Carolina, we have a recount law.
Right.
Well, of course, how do you recount when you are simply looking at the paper reflection of the internal machinery?
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, there is no way you can recount a ballot in South Carolina, except, of course, the paper ballots that are absentee early ballots.
So
those are the only paper ones you have.
Well, that's right. So you can repush the button again. You'll get the same results. But to prove that there was a problem with the machine in 10 days before they delete the information forever for these Democratic runoffs, actually Republican and Democratic runoffs that were being held 10 days later, it's impossible. So you bring this case, and it was a compelling case that you presented to the executive board of the state Democratic Party. I thought to myself, well, you know, this is a slam dunk case. He's, you know, you can't prove that you would have won the race, but Alvin Green can't prove that he won the race. And oh, by the way, Alvin Green didn't even bother to show up, didn't send a representative. The only evidence was that was presented at that hearing, Judge Rawl, was the evidence you presented to say that this could not have possibly been accurate. And yet the executive committee at some point voted to go into executive session. They turned off the cameras. They went behind closed doors, and then they came out, did their final deliberations, and rejected your protest. Do you have any idea, in talking to people, what they were thinking, why they rejected the compelling evidence that you put forward about this election?
I've got some information. I don't have it all.
Mm-hmm.
I think the information that I have is mostly legal from the standpoint of they did not believe that we had proven it sufficiently to suit their standard. And that standard, of course, is by the greater weight of preponderance of the evidence, more likely than not. But the people involved in the decision-making process simply did not feel we could meet that standard. There are a lot of other things I could go into, but it's not really a Democratic Party fight. I mean, we gave them the opportunity to make a decision. They made a decision. That decision, whether rightly or wrongly, depending upon whose point of view, is very interesting. But, of course, to appeal that decision would have been almost impossible from a legal standpoint to go further.
Would you?
To overturn them.
Yeah.
We would have had to show that there was no substantial evidence upon which they based their decision. Mm. And when you're talking about substantial evidence, they simply didn't accept ours. And if they didn't accept it, how do you appeal it?
Well, your attorney made the argument that they had to make their decision based on the evidence that they were presented in the hearing. The only evidence presented at the hearing was that the election was not recorded accurately, either by malfunction or malfeasance on these voting machines. How can it be then that they could decide that it was recorded accurately?
You're asking me to prove the unprovable.
They were asking you, Judge, to prove the unprovable. That's the problem here, isn't it?
I think you're absolutely correct. But like I say, the only thing we could do is tee it up. We can't hit the ball for them. And we did tee it up, and we gave them everything we could possibly give them within the period of time available and within the resources, not just the monetary resources, but the ability to get access to the cards, the internal mechanisms, the computer, the software, and all the rest of it, which, of course, was extremely limited. So we gave them everything we could give them. And there's a history on this machine that you know as well as I do. And, you know, it's only been banned in 26 states, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yeah, something like that.
But suffice it to say, we have serious problems in South Carolina. And I have been accused of castigating or calling into question a legitimate election. And I would beg to differ. I'm calling into question whether or not the machinery we have for voting in South Carolina, in fact, is promoting democracy or, in fact, stealing democracy.
I have been offering this, asking this question, offering this challenge. I'll repeat it again tonight. I will offer the challenge to anybody in South Carolina who ran that election on the State Election Commission, on any of at any of the counties, at ESNS, anywhere in the state, in the country, in the world. I will ask them to give me evidence that even one vote was recorded accurately for or against Alvin Green or Vic Raul in that U.S. Senate race on Election Day on those touchscreen machines. Any evidence, one vote. And the fact that we're running an election system like this, Judge, the fact that, frankly, that you were a judge, I spotted right away and I said, oh, this is good, because he understands what constitutes evidence. And we have no evidence. And, were you aware of this before the election, that this was the type of election system that was being used in South Carolina and all across the country, really?
I was aware of it, but it didn't really register, to be honest with you, because I had not had personal experience with the machine malfunctioning before. Now, obviously, South Carolina has apparently had problems in 2008 and 2006 in certain areas, but not at this magnitude.
It seems like too many candidates don't understand. I've been yelling and screaming about it for years. Don't understand the concerns about election integrity. And I'm talking about Democrats who don't get it. A lot of progressives who don't get it until their ox is gored, pun intended. All right, we're speaking with Judge Vic Raul. We're going to take a quick break here shortly. Come back, ask him where to from here. Will he run as an independent? Or if not, who the hell is he going to vote for this November? All of that and more. Your calls as well. 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. Brad in for Malloy. Much more straight ahead. I believe in the freedom song, and I'll choose my own destiny. Reform. Oh yeah, election reform.
That's what I recommend.
Good recommendation, Shannon Wilford. That's Delicious Blues Stew. And I am Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, speaking with Judge Vic Rall from South Carolina. Our final segment here. We will take your calls. And the entire next hour is open, so you can get in now if you want. If you dare, 877-520-1150. Judge Rall, of course, was announced the loser. I hate to even use that word here. The loser to Alvin Green in the U.S. Senate primary in South Carolina, the man that nobody ever heard of, somehow managed to win on these ESNS Ivotronic voting machines, which are 100% unverifiable, but my challenge still open. I'll take evidence that any vote was recorded accurately on them during this or any other election in which they were used. Judge, so you decided to not appeal this case. Why? Because there's just no evidence, nothing to get at this point?
No, it's not that there's no evidence. It's just the standard is that you would have to show that the executive committee did not have substantial evidence to support their position. And in this particular circumstance, they simply did not believe my evidence. So if that's the case, what is the basis of your appeal? None.
Having said that,
let me give a couple of more things, because I think your listeners are entitled to it.
Good.
On the blogosphere, I have been accused of not campaigning, which I think is rather disingenuous to the 1,000 volunteers that made phone calls, posters, meet and greets all over the state, to the 26 county conventions that I attended, to the state convention that I attended, to the 80 different speaking engagements that I had, to the 17,000 miles I put on the car in South Carolina driving to different events all over the state. Remembering this is a Democratic primary, this is not a general election, remembering that I was running against a complete ghost who never showed up to anything, how do you do that? Where do you put radio or television or banners or signs or whatever do you do when you're running against somebody that you've never seen or heard of?
There is no evidence that he ever campaigned anywhere at all.
Absolutely correct.
And by the way, let me get in here, Judge, that I've sent an invite to Alvin Green. I would love to have him on the show. I would love to ask him some questions. I have nothing against him. I very much, if he happens to be listening tonight or to the archives that we will post late night tonight at bradblog.com, Alvin Green, send me a letter. I'd love to hear from you. And you can use the library computer, probably, brad@bradblog.com. I would love to have you on to get your side of this. Anyway, I interrupted you, sir.
Well, I want to make certain that this is not me versus Alvin Green at this point in time. Alvin Green is the Democratic nominee for South Carolina's U.S. senatorial campaign against Jim DeMint. My intent was always to run against Jim DeMint. And I think all of your audience has heard of him. All of your audience knows what he does or doesn't do. And those of us in South Carolina that pay attention to and care about South Carolina also know that the past 5 years in South Carolina has been rather horrendous. Just look at the Jon Stewart show sometime. I think that he probably was the one behind all this for fear he'd lose his material. But having said that, in this one event, whether it is contrived, whether it's an accident, no matter what it is, all of the prior 5 years of shenanigans in South Carolina have been turned around because instead of having a compatible statewide slate of candidates to include congressional candidates, now South Carolina does not have a viable active candidate against DeMint, nor do we have a viable active candidate in the 1st Congressional District, which of course changes the demographics of the political spectra for the general elections in November.
And let me note here that there was a petition drive to get Democrat Linda Kettner to run, but on Monday of this week, she announced she will not accept a petition nomination to appear on the ballot. As well, today, a press release from Tom Clements of the Green Party in U.S. Senate. You can get more information at ClementsForSenate.com. He says he is running. He believes he is a viable candidate. But in the we don't even have a minute left here, Judge Vic Rawl.
I really can't talk to that so much. You're going to have third party candidates. There's no question about that.
Who will you be voting for? I only got 15 seconds before I got to get out of here.
I will vote for anybody but Jim DeMint.
So you will vote for Alvin Green if he is indeed on the ballot this November?
I may very well vote for Alvin Green, especially if it's Alvin Green versus Jim DeMint.
Is there any chance that anything can change concerning his felony conviction that he might have to leave the ballot? Would you come on if that was the case?
I'll cross that bridge when I get there. It would be very, very difficult since my entire campaign has been shut down completely to include funding and staffing.
I'll help you, sir. I'll give you some publicity. Judge Rawl, thank you very much for fighting the fight out there. Please keep it up, and please let me know how I can help you fight for our democracy, sir.
Thank you so much, Brad. I enjoy it.
Thank you, sir. Judge Vic Rawl. Okay, open phones coming up next. Anything you want to talk about, got some folks online, I will hit you guys as well. 877-520-1150. We'll be back. Friedman, friendly citizen, blogger, investigative journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, in for Mike Malloy all week long, broadcasting from the West Coast as the sun sets on the continent, with apologies to our friends up in Alaska and then out there in Hawaii. I'm glad you could join us here for our final hour. It's open lines. Anything you want to talk about, phone lines are filling up. I know folks want to talk about what happened there in South Carolina, and with the interview with Vic Rawl, who is just one. Desi just came in and said, "What a nice guy! What one hell of a guy he is! He really is." And I do appreciate his standing up and fighting where so many candidates just roll over. Our phone numbers are 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. If you want to get in, these are your public airwaves. They don't belong to Clear Channel. They belong to you. So as I like to say, use them or lose them more than you already have. 877-520-1150. Chat room is still open at bradblog.com. And if you are in San Francisco, sorry, you're getting a lot of Brad tonight. I think you just heard the Green News Report with Desi and myself at the top of the hour. If you're in San Francisco, and if your station doesn't carry it, they should. You can listen to it at greennews.bradblog.com. But one of the things that we talked about on today's Green News Report is the fact that climate scientists yet again were cleared in yet another investigation following this bogus, phony, nonsense, complete and utter BS garbage that the right-wing nutosphere has called ClimateGate. And really, it's when I say the right-wing nutosphere, what I mean is the fossil fuel industry, which is fueling the right-wing nutosphere and fueling a lot of suckers and chumps out there to fall for this nonsense that, oh, climate change is it's a hoax. The scientists were lying. Remember, the stolen emails from the scientists that Fox News dubbed ClimateGate Of course, another study was done, and the scientists were cleared of all the charges. There were none. There was no manipulation of data. There was no faking data. It was all complete and utter nonsense. But it wasn't just Fox News. It was also CNN, MSNBC, New York Times, AP, Washington Post, all the rest of them. Oh, yeah, the liberal media who ran with this nonsense story of ClimateGate. And, of course, now that it's complete and utter nonsense, are those same outlets going wall-to-wall, you know, explaining that the scientists' names have been cleared? Of course not. Same thing happened with the Acorn nonsense. Complete and utter hoax. The Acorn pimp hoax killed the entire organization, much as ClimateGate killed, in many respects, the fight for clean climate and energy change legislation in the Senate, although it's coming anyway, I hope. David Roberts of Grist is going to be joining us tomorrow on the show to talk about the climate change legislation as well as the BP disaster. But here's the deal that Simon Malloy wrote about this, the latest scam, and it plays into the Acorn nonsense. It plays into the ClimateGate nonsense. Simon Malloy over at Media Matters was writing about this this new fake story that Fox News and Andrew Breitbart, the liar, has been pushing. Feel free to call in, Andrew. We'd love to hear from you. The new story about this, the Black Panthers, this guy who was wielding a nightstick in Philadelphia during the 2008 election, and this is a great conspiracy. These are the conspiracy theorists, the people at Fox News, Glenn Beck and his buddies and Andy Breitbart. So it's a great conspiracy that Eric Holder didn't pursue the case further despite no complaints from voters, despite no evidence that there was any systematic issue here. This Black Panther jackass who was hanging out with a nightstick in front of the one pole somewhere in Philadelphia. This is a great conspiracy between Eric Holder and Barack Obama. Now that Acorn has been killed, they got to go after somebody, don't they, with their phony lies. Man, am I, I'm working so hard to not say the full word BS here tonight. I really am. keep your eye on the dump button in case I get into trouble, Tony. But yeah, here's how Simon Malloy put it, the reemergence of a very familiar pattern. One, right-wingers shout loudly about bogus story. Two, Fox News picks up bogus story, reports on it incessantly. Three, right-wingers and Fox News start complaining that, quote, liberal media are ignoring bogus story. Four, other outlets are shamed into covering bogus story. Mini frenzy ensues. Five, pundits credit Fox News for being, quote, ahead of the curve. Yeah, that's what happened at the New York Times on the Acorn story that was complete and utter, you had your finger on the button, complete and utter BS. Six, responsible media outlets determine the bogus story is bogus long after the damage is already done. Seven, repeat. Everyone clear on that? That's the pattern. And while we don't expect Fox News to stop it, I would love to see New York Times, Washington Post, AP, MSNBC, CNN, ABC, CBS, and NBC stop it. Please? Pretty please? All right. Your calls on that, on the South Carolina situation, on anything you want, even on the immigration issue, which I think is a fake issue. That ought to get the right-wingers calling. I'd love to hear from you, really. I'm not like Mike. I'd like the right-wingers to call in. I don't mind. Let me see. Let me go to the phones here. Okay. Daryl is calling in from San Jose, New Mexico. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Daryl.
Hey, hey, how are you?
I'm okay.
Hey, well, I'm in Santa Fe, actually. But,
not San Jose?
Right.
I'm so firing Desi. Desi, she screwed it up.
But
all
right. I just moved here a year ago. I'm a former resident of South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
So when you talk about this Alvin Green, it strikes a personal note with me. And if you can't tell by my voice, I am African American.
Okay.
With all respect to the judge, this is truly put all voters, especially African Americans, between a rock and a hard place.
Why?
But I would not vote for this man if you paid me $10,000. He is obviously a plant. I don't think black people or any people will be better served even by Jim DeMint than this man. He can't even produce a bank statement showing that he paid the filing fee.
Yeah,
remotely legitimate candidate.
This was one of the points I didn't get to. Well, I wish I could have gotten to it with the judge, but that somehow Alvin Green came up with $10,440 and to be the filing fee. He's being investigated for this because a year ago or a few months ago, he claimed he was indigent. He needed a public defender to fight the obscenity charge. So where did he get the $10,440?
Well, he didn't pay for it. Any legitimate candidate, the very first thing they would do would be to show that, to show their legitimacy. I know this sounds conspiratorial. I almost suspect he's being blackmailed because of this, whatever this charge he had. But to say something, so no, I wouldn't vote for this man, and I vote for the Green Party. I hope the Green Party guy runs. He goes to black voters and tell them just what I just said.
He's running ClementsForSenate.com. But you said black voters are, and as a black voter yourself, you said that black voters are between a rock and a hard place. Why?
Well, because there'll be some sympathy for this man. There's a movement. You can look on the internet. Some people want to make this man to be a Mr. Smith out of Washington, as proving that you can come from nowhere and beat the... I'd love for that to be true. It simply isn't true. There's a little fact that I'd like to throw out there, and anyone is welcome to look this up. It's right on Wikipedia that I have not seen mentioned on the major news. We at least know that at least once in fairly recent history, 1990, we know that a black man has been paid to run in South Carolina by a political operative named Rod Sheley, Sheely. You can look him up right on Wikipedia.
But Daryl, here's the problem. You're right, and it's possible that someone paid him to run, although it does seem if you're going to pay to put a plant on the ballot, you're going to put someone who's, you know, kind of, you know, can string a sentence together, who might actually show up and be somewhat viable and not cause so many red flags. But even if he's a plant, Daryl, you just being on the ballot doesn't get you 60% of the vote.
True. I didn't say they were necessarily related.
Yeah.
It could be a plight, I mean. But I think this goes way deeper. I think the reason the Democratic Party made that decision is because they don't want to uncover what's really going on. Mm-hmm. Similar with Acar. I think this goes way deeper. When you get to who he's, if he's a plant, and I believe he is, I'm sure of it, then you get to the issue of who he's a plant is. I don't think anyone wants to unturn those stones. The Sheely man, whom I mentioned, who planted a black man to run against Arthur Ravenel, who's a very powerful name in South Carolina, was later fined a whopping $500, basically for attempting to rig an election.
Daryl, I got to get out for a break. I appreciate your call. There is an investigation into that, and crew has
come to light after
it's too late.
Right.
Thanks, Daryl. Yeah. I got to run. More calls right after this.
Cowpoke went riding out one dark and windy day. Up on a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once the mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw plowing through a cloudy sky and up a cloudy draw.
All right, welcome back to the Molloy Program. Good choice, Tone.
Their brands were still on fire.
Oh, that's Johnny Cash, too. Right. A little bit more of that later tonight.
The horns were black and shiny.
Oh, by the way, for those who have been asking, no, have not heard back from Marcos Melitzis of Daily Coast. I'd love to talk to him about the bogus polls that he's been running at through no fault of his own from Research 2000 that he's been running over at Daily Coast, which he has now renounced. thanking the fact that they've been releasing data, or that the raw data allowed people to find the fraud, an irony that I'm not sure if he yet appreciates when it comes to these voting systems and the fact that without the raw data, without any data, we can't discover fraud. Delicose has been terrible on this front. I would love to have Marcos on to talk about it. Don't make me come to Vegas, to Netroots, and no panel. I'm dying to go to Netroots and ask them, where's the election integrity panel? Does election integrity not matter? I hear there's an election this year. I don't get it. Call me a conspiracy theorist all you want. The evidence, such that it exists, is on my side. 877-520-1150. I'm happy to talk to you about anything you want. 877-520-1150. No, Alvin Green hasn't called in yet either. And I don't think we got any right-wingers to call in to tell me why the immigration issue is not a fake issue. I think it's a fake issue. But anyway, 877-520-1150. Let me get to Doug in Minneapolis. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Doug.
Yeah, hi there.
Hi there.
I just wanted to stay on the same subject. That last caller kind of talked about some of it, but
yeah.
I figure you're probably one of the leading authorities on all of this in the country, and I'd like to get your theory on who was behind it and what their motive and what they were motivated by. I just had a thought that I'm wondering if it makes sense that it possibly could have been some kind of trial balloon,
mm-hmm.
saying that they would do something that was so over the top and so obvious that the next time around when they do one, people will be softened up a little bit, or, you know, that's just one thought I had, but.
Well, look, the obvious villain here, if there is one, and I want to make it clear, I have no idea whether this election was stolen in South Carolina. No idea. There is no evidence, frankly, at least hard evidence, to prove that it was stolen or to prove that it was legitimate. And that's the problem. And that's the problem that the judge in his protest had to face. He had to go in there and prove that the election was not legitimate. There was, you know, the state was not required to prove that Alvin Green actually won. And that's a good thing, because they couldn't have. There is no evidence for it. So, I don't know if it was stolen or not, if there was bad guys involved here. All of the other theories seem to not work, other than problems with the voting systems, either by malfunction or malfeasance. That said, if there was malfeasance here, obviously you look at the Republicans, obviously you look at Jim DeMint, and people have said, well, why would Jim DeMint need to do that? Nobody had ever heard of Vic Raul either. That's not true. He didn't have a huge the people who knew of him, name recognition in the state, but he had some. And the fact was, there was a public poll. I originally thought it was internal, but a public poll which had him 7 points away from Jim DeMint, the incumbent Republican senator. That, you know, it was June now of this year. He's 7 points away in a year where incumbents are said to be under fire, and Jim DeMint's approval rating is less than 50%. Not a good place for an incumbent to be. So that would be the first suspect, obviously. But other than that, we don't have any evidence, Doug.
Because I was under the impression, I had heard just what you said a few weeks ago. I heard that it was considered to be a slam dunk anyways. That's interesting.
That's what a lot of people
really was. Pretty close.
Yep, that's what a lot of people have been led to believe by the bad media out there. There is a poll to put him in around 7 points. I appreciate the call, Doug. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, more of your calls at 877-520-1150. Brad in for Malloy coming into our final half hour. dedicated to our friends south of the border. You know, I haven't gotten any right-wingers call. I said that this immigration issue is phony, is fake. I thought I would get some right-wingers calling in and tell me how I was wrong, but they're not calling. I don't get it. I mean, after all, in Arizona, it's the kidnapping capital of the world. Crime is through the roof. People are being beheaded every 2 to 3 minutes on the street corners out there in Phoenix. I can't believe that the right-wingers haven't called in to tell me I'm wrong about this being a fake issue. Oh, well, 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Going to talk about anything you want to talk about. Got a bunch of folks who want to talk about what happened in South Carolina. And so let me, that primary election and all kinds of election problems and everything else. So let me pick one. Who's not on that? Here we go. Yasin in Orlando. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. You must turn down your radio, sir.
What's up, man?
What's up, Yasin?
What are your opinions on Michael Steele?
He's funny. Don't you think?
Yeah, like, I can't stand half the stuff he says. It's funny, though. He's a moron. Like, that's what makes him funny.
That is what makes him funny. He's damned entertaining, and he's crazy. But what's odd here is he's less crazy than the party he leads, and that is that's saying quite a bit.
That is true.
Thanks for the call, Yasin.
No problem.
See ya. Take care of Orlando down there. All right, let's get to Blaine. There we go. Wait, nope, wrong. Wait, there we go. Oh, man, did I just hang up on everybody? Hey, Dave, I just hung up on whoever I just hung up on. My apologies. Call back. There's some open lines. Dave in Blaine, Washington.
Yeah,
my apologies.
High-ranking election officials in Kentucky were found guilty. The network media like CNN and the like just completely under the radar. These are superintendents,
circuit court judge, and the county clerk.
A county clerk. I mean, wow.
Yeah, and that happened on the same voting machines that they use down there in South Carolina, and they're still using them in Kentucky. They're going to be using them in the Rand Paul election down there. And I tried to get Rand Paul on the air last time I was covering here for Mike Malloy, and they kept telling me, "Oh yeah, he'll come," and then he never came on the show. And so, and he was running, by the way, in the primary against the Secretary of State.
These Republicans think they're going to get in by default, thinking that and a lot of the media is helping, create this phony, environment where everybody's pissed off at Obama, or whatever the narrative is for the day, Monday through Friday, contributing to all this confusion with, these teabaggers, and they don't even know who they're, where their allegiances lie.
Well, you know what? There are reasons to be ticked off at Obama, frankly.
Yeah, you're right.
But,
you're absolutely right.
But those issues actually are not covered legitimately. I mean, we hear, death panels about Obama. There needs to be some real criticism of Obama, frankly. We try to bring it to you every night here and on Brad Blog and everywhere else. But instead, we have to suffer these phony debates, about immigration, about death panels, about he's not mad enough about BP. Oh, he's taking too long to decide about Afghanistan. I mean, phony arguments, Dave.
It really is. Yep. And I'm hopeful that shows like yours, you guys are just ripping the veneer right off, and people, the majority that thankfully for Obama, helped him become president is still there. I consider, the quiet, the silent majority.
Well, they're silent and silenter because they're peeling away, Dave, and we need to, Obama needs to get his act together.
Well, we have Alan Grayson, we have Patty Murray, we have Dennis Kucinich that's still there. even though the media, you know, won't talk to them very much.
Well, yeah. Well,
but hopefully that'll change.
Yeah, well, it's not a lot. Frankly, the Democrats, they ought to be out there demanding every damn day to pass climate legislation, renewable energy legislation now with this backdrop in the Gulf. And the fact that they are not doing that, Dave, I got to hold their feet to the fire, too. We ain't like the Republicans around here, you know, giving everyone a pass. It's accountability.
Republicans want to be the ones spending the money. That's why they're pissed.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't have their World War III that they wanted during Bush.
Yeah, well, they do have it. That's the problem, Dave. They do have it. We're continuing these wars. There's no sight of getting out.
But it almost seems like they're using Afghanistan and Somalia and Haiti, you know, as, and not to sound conspiratory or anything, but to funnel not our country, but just this network around the planet that's, you know, feeding off of petroleum and war.
That's it.
And funneling money. However they're doing it, you know, I don't know the specifics, but my gut tells me that this is what's going on. And now, thankfully, we saw some headlines today, you know, on Rachel's show and Keith's show, but it's just a glimmer, but it's insidious what's happening.
It is, Dave. Here was 2 weeks ago on Meet the Press, Tom Ricks, author of Fiasco and The Gamble, who is actually in favor of continuing this war in Afghanistan, says if we get out now, it will be an endless war. I'm not sure I agree there, but he did hit one point correctly, and you may have nailed it, Dave. Let me play this clip for you.
20 seconds, Tom. How does it end?
I don't think it does. I think we have landed in the middle of the Middle East, for better or worse, in a way that none of us expected us to. I think the war in Afghanistan was made much worse by the distracting war in Iraq, which never should have happened.
Yeah.
But we are dealing with phenomena in the Middle East that's going to be crucial to this country as long as we're dependent on Middle East oil. So the best exit strategy I can think of is emphasize alternative fuels.
Bingo. Emphasize alternative fuels, and the fact that the Democrats aren't out there every day with the best backdrop they will ever have in their life to pass clean energy legislation. We got to hold them accountable. No more excuses for them, Dave.
No, it's such a slow, it's excruciating how slow the process is. You know, it's screaming, you know. You know, they need those, you know, those Democrats and whoever that are just shaking in their knees because they don't want to, you know, sacrifice their job. You know, they have health care for the rest of their life. You know, step aside and let somebody else, you know, that's an Alan Grayson type that's just going to, you know, get these pieces of legislation, you know, pushed through.
And we love Grayson. We got to hold their feet to the fire and stop worrying so much about the teabaggers. They're crazy. I got to run, Dave. Thanks for the call. I do appreciate it, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And, you know, then, of course, it's the media as well. Hold the media's feet to the fire. And let's get some more goddamn progressive radio on the air, shall we? Lou Opta for 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Our friend Lou Optifer is on line four here from the Great Northeast. That's the only thing you'll tell us about your undisclosed location, sir?
Oh, you know about the satellite that aimed at me.
Okay. Put on your tinfoil hat. Hey, how are you, sir? Welcome to the show. What's up?
Oh, not much. Just a lot. Actually, you brought up another topic. I was originally intending to talk about South Carolina a bit more, but your last topic is a great one, and one of the ones that I wanted to sort of, an idea I've wanted to advance, I'm trying to, is the idea that what we're facing in the Gulf of Mexico is the equivalent, is a world-class 9/11 event.
Yep.
I don't see, I see it more 9/11 than 9/11 was.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. We will never have a moment like this. Well, God, I hope we don't. But there will never be a more perfect moment. It should be. They should be dealing with this the way the Bush administration dealt with 9/11, which is to say they turned on a dime. They created this terror war. Whatever you think about 9/11, whatever you think about the policies, and they were horrible, but they turned on a dime. They took that disaster, however it came about, and said, we are beginning a war on terror. It starts here. It starts now. It's going on forever, yada, yada, yada.
And that's we're remorphing it into... to make Saddam look like Osama bin Laden.
Of course, that's right. And it was nonsense. The way they did it was nonsense, but my point is...
It was a perfect guess.
They made the pivot, and they turned the entire government, the entire country, and the entire world into fighting this terror war, you know, rightly or wrongly. That's what they did. Obama, the Democrats need to turn this event in BP, turn it for the world, the country, the entire planet into fighting for clean energy. Now we're done with the fossil fuels. Over from this day forward, everything changes. Exactly. That's what needs to happen.
That's the way I wrote about it. Was it's the day the world changed.
Do you want? I got to run, Lwoptifer. You want to tell us where you wrote about it?
It was actually on E Pluribus Media.
E Pluribus Media.
Yeah, if you look for something like 4-01-2010, BP's 9/11.
Very good, sir. Check out E Pluribus Media. Appreciate the great work you're doing over there, Lwoptifer.
Great. You too. Talk with you later.
Thank you, brother. All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, let me see how many calls I can get to here really quick because I want to get as many as I can in. Let's see. Nick from San Francisco. Welcome.
Hey, I'm a loyal KTLK listener. I'm just up here on business. You know why they're called teabaggers, don't you? Clown Posse was already taken.
Okay. Well done. Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
Hurry home and enjoy Green 960 up there until you get back here to K-Talk. All right. We got to get to a break. Is that what you're trying to tell me? Tony, I heard some music, didn't I? You went? That's okay. No. Okay. All right. Let me give one more call in. Then we're going to go to a break. Our friend Dave in Humboldt County. Welcome to the Molloy Show, sir.
Brad, one caller here that wants to leave no question whatsoever. I do not think of voting machines as inaccurate, undependable, unreliable. I think of voting machines as deliberately put there to be used by neocons who intend to rig elections, who are stealing our democracy. That's one man's opinion. I very much appreciate your investigative efforts.
I thank you, sir, for using your public airwaves to get your voice and your opinions heard. Much appreciated, Dave. Thank you, sir. Stay safe up there. All right, now we'll go to a break. Light it up, Tone. We're coming back with a few more of your calls, 877-520-1150. Try to keep them as short and sweet as you can, and I'll get in everybody, maybe, if the gods are with us. Brad Friedman in for Mike Molloy all week long. Tomorrow night, as I said, David Roberts from Grist, and maybe Dean Logan of the L.A. County Registrar. Much more. Stay ahead.
Soon you'll find you're running out of time. It won't be long till all your...
Maybe I didn't love you quite as often as I could have. Maybe I didn't treat you quite as good as I should have. If I made you feel second best,
we would never do that, would we?
Girl, I'm sorry I was blind.
I am sorry.
You were always on my mind. You were always on my mind.
All right, our last few minutes here on The Molloy Show tonight. Going to try to get to everybody I can on the phones here, but I do want to send out my thanks to engineer Tony Sorrentino. Tony, you rock, brother. Good stuff. Good music. The best, really. Producer Desi Doyen, also screening the calls and doing green news tonight. Triple duty. Jeannie Dean over at the bradblog.com chat room. Thank you, JD. And, of course, to Mike and Kathy Molloy for allowing me to stink up the joint in their absence, which I'll continue to do for the next week. So I hope you'll stay with us. Also, if you're listening on MikeMolloy.com, stay tuned for Head On Radio with Bob Kincaid hereafter. Oh, and my thanks to Ernie Canning and Judge Vic Rawl, our guests tonight. Okay, I'm going to fly through these calls, try to get to everybody. Dwayne in Portland, Maine. What's your thoughts, sir? Very quickly.
Brad, I want to thank you for the work you're doing. You're performing a public service. I really think the internet is the last bastion of true journalism, And I think one of the things we need to really be concerned with, this is a perfect example of what I think of the work that you do. First they, it was Gandhi who said this, first they ignore you, then they ridicule you, then they fight you, and then you win. And I see you as winning. I see we're winning because of the work you're doing. It's true investigative journalism, and I think that so often people who fancy themselves progressives and think they're so enlightened and aware are so concerned with looking legitimate and joining the club that what we do is we let the stealth radicalism of the mainstream corporate media go unaddressed. We cannot be concerned with joining the club and being looked at as legitimate by the usual suspects, because while we're looking at Glenn Beck,
yeah,
and we're concerned with Rush Limbaugh's latest insane statement, the New York Times, the Washington Post are cheerleading for war. And nobody's addressing it.
Yep.
Nobody's addressing the fact that the mainstream media doesn't ever look at Don Siegelman. And the Justice Department doesn't deal with it. And Obama doesn't deal with it because he's afraid to deal with it. And everything in the mainstream media, in the establishment media, is framed in terms of what the corporations want.
Thanks.
It's completely distorted.
I hear you, Dwayne. Thank you, sir. I do appreciate your kind words and your thoughts. And if it wasn't for the fact that Glenn Beck has co-opted the Gandhi quote too, one of these nights they fight you, then you win and ignore you, blah blah blah. One of these nights I'll start channeling Glenn Beck. Yeah, I can do that. And sometimes I do. So we got to be quick about this. David in Montana, welcome to the show, sir. What's on your mind in 15 or 30 seconds?
Thank you. Terrorism is being used as a cattle prod to corral nations first.
Yep.
And then also, I think South Carolina deal is the people are just fed up and disgusted with the incumbents, and they voted for anybody they didn't recognize.
Yeah, but Vic Raul wasn't recognized. Only 18% knew him, and he wasn't an incumbent. And by the way, they didn't vote for Alvin Green on the paper-based absentee ballot, so go figure.
I just think that people just knew that this guy was a nobody and they voted for him.
They knew he was a nobody. All right. Thanks, Dave. Your theory is as good as anybody else's. I don't think we should have to theorize about elections. I think we should be able to have evidence as to who won or lost. But they call me crazy. Frank from West Hills, California. What's up, Frank?
Well, voting machines are illegal due to the fact that since the law requires a recount, you can't recount a voting machine unless you have a paper trail. So I don't know why they don't bring that issue legally. Voting machines are illegal. How can you count a number if you don't have a paper trail?
Because this is the U.S. of A, 2010, and the courts have said, oh, well, push the button. That's good enough for us. We'll take the recount. That's what they do, Frank. I know. It's insane. Insane.
What court said that? The Supreme Court?
It's never gone to the Supreme Court. I actually went to the High Court in Germany, and they agreed with you. They said, no, can't do it. These are illegal. And they stopped using those electronic machines in Germany and in Denmark and in Ireland. But here, they're just fine, Frank. I got to go. But I hear you. They ought to be illegal. We ought to throw them in the Gulf and fill up the gusher with them.
Well,
thanks, Frank.
I don't know if we should do that, but at least throw them in the dump.
Thanks, brother. Got to go. Let's go to Steve in Burbank. 10 seconds, sir. What's up?
Brad, if the bagger conservatives are so hot about their ideology, why can't we get them to challenge their icons to go on to the liberal media, that is mainstream broadcasts, and debate guys like you, guys like Tom Harbin, Rachel against Beck, Hannity, Limbaugh, et al.
Bring them on. Send them emails.
Right.
Send them my Twitter feed. I'm at Steve. I got to go.
Okay.
They can follow me at the Brad Blog on Twitter or bradblog.com. Hey, Rich, truth is all in Delray Beach, Florida. My apologies. Let me give you 15 seconds to plug your book on election fraud. Go, Rich.
Okay, thank you very much.
Go, quick.
Real quick, this whole R2K, Research 2000
Rich, hit your book. Give us the website.
All right, richardsharnan.com, the name of the book, Proving Election Fraud.
You can find it over at Amazon.
Amazon.
Thanks, Rich.
All over the place.
Gotta go. See you tomorrow night, America. Keep it lit.